We're holding on the top line of Tezayin Amud Aleph. See if maybe we can catch up on some missed ground today. We're still in the middle of trying to figure out. We started a discussion on Yudalot Amud Aleph whether Beis Shammai, when in these various machlokas, Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, did Beis Shammai actually follow their opinion in practice? Asur or loy asur? On the one hand, we might argue asur. I mean, they had the right to, maybe, you know, before the Baskel came out, then they should be entitled to follow their own opinion. Even after the Baskel came out, maybe we don't hold the Baskel. On the other hand, they're the minority. We've been going back and forth. So far, we had most of the proofs that we tried to bring that Beis Shammai followed their own opinion. We said we were able to slug up. We were able to demonstrate that we were able to demonstrate that there's other possibilities that you could equally well understand the story if we say loy asur. We only have so far one clear one, the story with Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadik, and Rabbi Yechon and Acharoni and the wet olives, where there we clearly see that asur, that normally Beis Shammai did follow their own opinion. And it was something special about Rabbi Tzadik or Rabbi Yechon and Acharoni, however you parse the story, that he, even though he was from Beis Shammai, followed the opinion of Beis Hillel. But now we're going to finally finish that up. Tashma. Come, let's bring a proof. Braisa says, in the time of Rabbi Yosef ben Hokinas, who was as we'll see soon, he was shortly after the Churban, and he may have lived throughout the whole time of the Bais Sheni. We'll get to that later. Hutra Tzoras Abbas La'achim. The Tzoras Abbas was permitted. They officially gave out a psak halacha that she's permitted to marry the brothers, the Duyivim, according to Beis Shammai. Shmamina Asu. That shows that Beis Shammai actually did according to their own opinion, because that's what it means. If we're saying that they actually paskin that way in practice, Shmamina, that proves it. So there we go. Beis Shammai followed their own opinion, and they would be matzah the Tzoras Abbas to the brothers. Gufa. So let's get back to that now. Eventually the halacha was decided like this. So that's what we were saying before. At the beginning of the sugya, we said there's two possibilities. Right. Do we mean that they were also before the Baskel came out, or do we mean maybe even also after the Baskel came out? Yeah.
The outcome is
it could be either way, really. We didn't conclude that. Yeah. Gufa. So now getting to that story, let's go into the details. We made up Joseph and Hokinas, the Tirut Tzoras Abbas La'achin, and in his time they were matir the Tzoras Abbas to the brothers. The Chachamim found it a very troublesome thing. He was a great Talmud Chacham. They had decided according to Beis Hillel, based on the Baskel, based on Beis Hillel Zeroy, whatever, and here Rav Yosef ben Hokinas is going and then giving a psak halacha the other way around. And he's a big Talmud Chacham. Many people are going to end up following him. And the problem is they couldn't tell him, come to the Beis Medrash and we'll discuss it, because Ve'ein of Kamun, we love you, the Beis Medrash. His eyes were heavy. He was old. He couldn't come to the Beis Medrash anymore. That's what we're asking. That's what we're saying. That is the problem, yeah. So they couldn't ask him to come. So that they could resolve it, because he's too old. He couldn't see well enough to come. Omru miyelech. So the Chachamim said, okay, well, who's going to go over Yedia and inform him that we want to decide otherwise, and he should take back his opinion. So Rabbi Yeshua says, I'll go. We'll go to him. Rabbi Yeshua at this time was avvesting. The Achrav Mi, okay, who should go second following Rabbi Yeshua? That would be Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Marshall says that this may have been after Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had already been appointed the Nasi, the famous story in Brachas. So therefore, okay, he's not going first, even though he's a Nasi, because Rabbi Yeshua is older, but still he'll be the logical next one to go. The Achrav Mi, and who should be third? Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva doesn't have any official position, but still he's the greatest of the remaining Chachamim. They went and stood by Rabbi Yosef ben Hokinas' door. Nichnas Shivchasa, his maidservant, goes in. Amrlo, Rebbe, Chachmi Yisrael, boy, netzlacha. The Chachmi Yisrael have come to visit you. Amrlo, you come too. So he tells her, fine, let him come in. Benichnasu, and they came in. Now, Rabbi Yosef ben Hokinas was saying the Ein of Kamu, his eyes were heavy, his eyes were weak because he was old, but it's not like he couldn't see at all. He could see a little bit, but so for example, as we'll see, he could recognize Rabbi Yeshua. He knew him already from old times, so he was able to recognize him enough. The other ones, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Akiva, are relatively speaking sugar coming there. They're new people, so he didn't recognize him so well. So, Tov said Rabbi Yeshua, so Rabbi Yosef ben Hokinas grabs a hold of Rabbi Yeshua, Va'yishiva al mita shel zahav, and he had him sit on a golden bed. He recognized him. He's an elder, distinguished Talmud Chacham. He deserves to have an important seat like that. Amalei, Rabbi Yeshua tells him, Rebbe, emer l'tamid cha'acha v'yeshiv, please tell your other Talmud who's here to sit down. Amalei Mihu. Rabbi Yosef ben Hokinas asked, who is he? Again, he didn't recognize him. We know the famous thing from the story in Brachos over there. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was 18 when he became Nasi. So in the days when Rabbi Yosef ben Hokinas had been regularly coming to this Medrash, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was a little kid, or maybe not even born yet. So he didn't know. Amalei Mihu, so he asked, who is he? And he says, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Omar, so Rabbi Yosef ben Hokinas was surprised. V'yeshle ben la'Azariah chavireinu, really, our friend Azariah has a son. He's such a great Talmud Chacham. Now this Azariah, actually, there's a Mishnah in Zvachim that mentions Shimon Achi Azariah, and the word is that this Shimon and Azariah had a Yisachar Zvulun arrangement. Shimon was a Talmud Chacham. Azariah was a very rich person. We know from other Gemaras, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was also very rich. He inherited it from his father. So Azariah supported Shimon and got some of the schutz for his learning. So Rabbi Yosef ben Hokinas is very happy to hear that Azariah, who maybe this is the Stam passed away many years earlier, has a son who is such a distinguished Talmud Chacham. Kara Olam Mikra Azeh, he said on him this pasuk, Na Ra'isi Gam Zakanti, I've been young, I've become old, V'lo Ra'isi Tzadik Nezav, I've never seen a tzadik who was abandoned, V'zarim Avakash Lachem, or his descendants that have to look for bread. Which Marshall says, the vort is he's saying, some people say in Nusach Ashkenaz, they say it at the end of benching. You know, in Nusach Hari, we don't. But he's referring it to him because he's saying, in other words, that not only there was a tzaddik Azariah, but he even has Vizare, his descendants are continuing in that way. The Yerushalmi, by the way, adds another interesting detail, which will become important a little later. He says, I recognize actually that he's a descendant of Ezra, which in fact he was. The Gemara in Bracha says he was a tenth generation descendant of Ezra. His eyes look like Ezra's eyes. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's eyes look like his ancestor Ezra's. Now, how does Rabbi Yosef ben Hokinas? We'll get to that too. We'll get back to that too. No, because he may not be able to see from far away. Maybe like nearsighted or whatever. But if he carefully opens his eyes, then he's able to see.
Yeah.
So that's what Marshall says. No, Marshall says the vort is that it's referring to the fact that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is rich, like his father Azariah. So none of them are in a position of having to be mevakeh shlochem. They're all very, very rich. So he held on to him and also had him sit on a golden bed there. Amalei, then Rabbi Yeshua tells him, or maybe Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi, emrei lo talmidecha acha v'yeshiv, please tell your other Talmud, there's a third Talmud of yours over here, to sit down. Now, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Akiva are not really Talmidim of Rabbi Yosef ben Hokinas, because they really came only after he was too old to come to this matter, so they're calling him Talmidim out of respect for him. Amalei umvihu, they tell him Akiva ben Yosef. So you're the famous Rabbi Akiva ben Yosef, that your name extends from one end of the world to the other. Shev b'ni shev, my son, sit down, please. Halavai, there should be more like you among the Jewish people. Which Marshal says, the vort is that he's saying to him, you're there. Halavai, there should be more like you from among the born Jews. No, he was descended from Gerim, rather. He's descended from Gerim. So Rabbi Yosef ben Hokinas tells him, Halavai, there should be such great Talmud Chachamim from you among the born Jews.
And was he allowed to remind him?
Everybody knew. It was a common thing. It was only the second generation, but it was a commonly known thing. Yeah, no, but no, he wasn't making fun of him. Abed Abi, he's saying, Shmoy Tzchiyur Bibi Yisrael. Not specifically. Well, actually, yeah, one of the Mefarshim says, so why didn't he have Rabbi Akiva sit on the golden bed also? So Marsha says, Marsha says more on the fact that he had the first two sit, and then Rabbi Akiva, he just invites him himself to pull up a chair, is because the other two, fine, they're the Nasi and the Abbasin. Rabbi Akiva is on a lower level a little bit. And one of the other Mefarshim, maybe Ben Yehoyada, I don't remember, wants to say that Pasha, the bed, they were sitting, Rabbi Yosef ben Hokinas himself is sitting on the golden bed, the golden couch or whatever. There's only room for two more. So once Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah are sitting, there's no room for a third. So necessarily, he has to have Rabbi Akiva sit on a regular chair. But one of the Mefarshim on Ein Yaakov, by the way, points out when he says that your name, that Akiva, that he says to Rabbi Akiva, your name goes Misofa Olam Bat Sofa, he says the gematria of the phrase Misofa Olam Bat Sofa is 564. And that is the number of times Rabbi Akiva is mentioned in all Shas.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That is free.
Yeah. Okay. So they started talking around in halachas from one topic to another. Until finally they reached this matter of tzaras habat. Now why didn't they bring it up directly? So one of the Marsha says because we learned yesterday that Rabbi Yeshua was nervous, people are going to break his head. So they also, he didn't want that right away they're going to get into tzaras habat and he'll say, no, I don't want to get involved. Like this, you know, once they're going from one thing to another, eventually they reach this point. Amalei, so they ask him, Soras Abbas Mahu, so what's the din about the Soras Abbas? As you know, Machlokes Tishamei B'Silol. Halacha k'divei mi, nu, who's the halacha like? Amalehen halacha k'b'Silol, plain and simple. Amalei, wait a minute, Ba'alei Mishimcha Amr halacha k'b'Shamai. We heard in your name that halacha is like b'Shamai. Amalehem, he says to them, wait a minute, how did you hear the report? Doisa Shmaitim or Ben Hokinas Shmaitim? Did you hear that Rab Doisa Ben Hokinas said this, or did you maybe just hear that Ben Hokinas said this? Because you should know there's going to be another Ben Hokinas. Yeah. Amalei, Rechaye Rebbe, Rebbe, we swear by your life, Stam Shmaitim, we just heard Stam, we just heard Ben Hokinas. Yeah. Stam Shmaitim. Amalehem, in that case, it wasn't me. Ach Cotton Yeshli, I have a younger brother. B'chur Satan, who? He's a B'chur Satan. Now, what does that mean? There's a lot of different explanations. Right. Rashi says it means he's chorif v'oymed al shmua, v'ein eshav mishmas. It means he's sharp, but he's stubborn. He sticks to his guns, as we would say. So he doesn't necessarily follow the rabbim. But there's a lot of other explanations what this B'chur Satan means. Among them are one interesting one. Maybe it's not Satan, but maybe the tes is really a nun and a vav that accidentally got joined together. Maybe it's B'chor Shonun. He's a short person. Like Mishalashim Vishinansam. Tos B'tishanim brings up a possibility that Kor Sutton is the name of a place. So I have a younger brother who lives in Kor Sutton. Yeah. Or another possibility some of the Mepharshim bring based on Tanad Ve'eliyahu, if it's not B'chor Sutton, but B'chor Shoite, which not Shoite in the sense like a fool, but B'chor Shoite in the sense not a real, honest-to-goodness B'chor, he's a B'chor from his mother, not from his father. In other words, Hokin, I said, remarried. And his first son from his second wife is this younger brother. So he is Ben Hokinas, but he's only Rabbi Ben Hokinas' half brother. Anyway, the Yonason Shmoy, his name is Yonason, Vuhumi Talmidei Shammai. He is from the Talmidim of Shammai. So when you heard that Ben Hokinas Paskin, that Tzara Sabas is Mutter, that wasn't me. I hold the halacha like this. It was my brother. However, according to that last explanation, not a stepbrother, but a half brother. According to all the other ones, it could be it was a full brother. Whatever. V'hizaru shalei kapeh cheskan ba'halachas. But be careful he doesn't chop you off at the knees when it comes to halachas. L'fishi yeshima shloish meis trubis b'tzaras abas shimuteres. Because he has 300 arguments about this business of tzaras abas that's mutter. So if you end up getting into a discussion with him, he'll good luck, basically. Yeah, he's gonna overpower you with his tzaras. Aval, but as far as me, why don't I accept this 300 arguments? Made on the Alay Shemaim Va'aret. I bring aedus of heaven and earth in my favor. Shal Meducha Zu Yashav Chagei Anavi, that Chagei Anavi sat on this Meducha, on this mortar. A mortar was a large container that you use for grinding things. We learned about it in Beitza. So you used to sometimes turn it over and use it as a seat. So Chagei Anavi, which is now at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, this story happened after the Korban. This is at the beginning of the second Mishnah. The Chagai sat on this Meducha, but almost Shlosha Dvarim, and he said three halachas. And before we get to the three halachas, so how does he know that Chagai sat on this Meducha? So there's two ways of looking at it. The Rambam says, indeed, Rabbi Doseb and Hokinas Pasha lived throughout the whole time of the second Mishnah. He lived a very long life. We call him one of the Tanoim, but really he was alive already in the times of Chag, and that would explain, according to the Rambam, how he can also say in the Yerushalmi that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's eyes resemble Ezra's. He had seen Ezra back in the day, so now all these hundreds of years later, he's able to recognize. On the other hand, Rabbi Shmuel Gaon, there's a trova from Rabbi Shmuel Gaon where they asked him, Hayitachin, did Rabbi Doseb ben Hokinas really live that long? And he says no. He says, he's saying, Eidus Chagei Anavi sat on this very Meducha. He says, big deal. We have in our yeshiva, we have Kabbalahs, ish mipi ish, reliable Kabbalahs that we can say over exactly what happened in the yeshiva 100 or 150 years ago. So it's a big deal. He had an explicit Kabbalah, a clear Kabbalah from his parents who went back a couple of generations that Chagei in fact sat on this Meducha and said these three dinim. And as far as what about the business with Ezra, so somebody else wants to say that maybe he had a picture of Ezra. He never saw him in the flesh, but he had a picture of him, and he's able to compare.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. I don't know. You know what? The same way as we have a picture of the Tzemach Tzedek because a guy looked in through the window and painted, and maybe he had a picture of Ezra the same way, you know. Who says it was a Jewish artist?
Or
well,
he came to him in his brain when he was learning.
Yeah. What are the three halachas? Number one, Saras Habas Asura. It's Asura, like we're saying. Number two, Amun and Moav Meisr and Meisr Oni B'Shvius, that in the countries of Amun and Moav, where they don't have the dinim of Shemitah, because not out of Israel, so instead what they do is, they during Shemitah year, they should take Maisa Oni. Now there's Machloikas in the Mishnah and Yudayim, whether they should take Maisa Sheni that year or Maisa Oni. He's saying the Chagai said that it should be Maisa Oni. We'll get back to it in a minute. We'll get back to Dafka why Maisa Oni. Now, by the way, when you say Amon and Moav over here, what part of Amon and Moav are we talking about over here? Rashi says we're talking about the part that Moshe conquered, the part of Amon and Moav that used to belong to those countries. Then Sichon conquered them, the famous Amon and Moav, Taru with Sichon, didn't it? And then it was given to Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven. So what happened if that's the case? If Bnei Gad, Bnei Reuven, and Chatzi Menashe lived there, then it's full-fledged part of Eretz Yisrael. The vote is, as we've talked about before, we had about this in Rosh Hashanah, I think, that once the first Beis Hamikdash was destroyed and the Jewish people were sent into Golos, the original Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael was bottled. When they came back to rebuild the second Beis Hamikdash, they were re-Mekadosh Eretz Yisrael, but not all of it. There were some parts of it that were left un-Mekadosh. Because one of them is Eivar Yazin, according to this. But then, so they still have, though, since originally it was considered part of Eretz Yisrael, and it has a certain similarity to Eretz Yisrael, and therefore they were Masakin, that you have to give Trumas and Maisers there. They were not Masakin, that you have to keep Shemitah there. So the question becomes, what kind of Maiser do you give in the seventh year? Tosfos says Lav Davka. Tosfos says we could even be talking about the original Amon and Moav, the parts that remained in the hands of Amon and Moav and were never conquered by Bnei Yisrael. But nevertheless, in times of the Bais Sheni, Jews were living there. So the same way as the same Mishnah and Yudayim talks over there, that the Chachamim or the Nevi'im or whatever were Misakin, that they should also take Trumas and Maisers in Babel and in Mitzrayim, even though obviously those were never part of Eretz Yisrael. Same thing, Amon and Moav, even though even the parts that were never conquered would also have the same din. Anyway, that's the second din.
But we don't do that.
Well, how many Jews are there who are farmers who live in Jordan nowadays, in Moab and Ammon? I mean, come on.
But yeah. Like Egypt and Babel.
There aren't a whole lot of Jewish farmers in those countries either.
No, wouldn't I guess that would, what I was thinking is that it kind of says that, I guess it's not totally all the way, because those are, it would have said the whole world, but it
no, they weren't mistaken for the whole world, no, that's just the countries near Eretz Yisrael. Just the country near Eretz Yisrael. No, there is a bit of a question about certain parts of Israel nowadays are not necessarily part of Kedusha Shniyah. Some parts of Israel, of modern Israel, may be part of only Kedusha Rishonah, and therefore maybe Shmita is only Noyig and then Medrabanan, if at all. That's a different discussion. Anyway. And number three, Umakablin Gerim mina Kaudurim mina Talmudim. You're allowed to accept Gerim from Kaudu and from Talmud, which we'll talk about on Amud Beis. We'll talk about later on this Amud and more on Amud Beis, what the problem with these places are. Basically, in a nutshell, the problem is the potential problem with these places is that there were mixed Jews and Goyim over there. So there can be people who are considered Mamzerim, because there is a day that if a Goyish man marries a Jewish woman, that the children are Mamzerim. Hello. Or maybe the other way around also. We'll talk about it more on Amud Beis and probably more tomorrow.
Because of the
part of, no, not because of the Machlokes of the Shammah Beis Hillel. It's actually partly based on what Rabbi Akiva had said, which we had a few times, that Chayv Lavim calls a mamzer, and there's a lav of a Jewish woman to marry a Goyish man, or vice versa. So in these places, there may be potential mamzerim. Therefore, you can argue, even if we consider them goyim, and according to Rakiba, at least, yes. So the problem is, you can have these people are goyim who are also mamzerim. If they become Jews, if they become berim, they still remain mamzerim. Then you're going to have more mamzerim joining the Jewish people, and you don't really want that. So there's a reason to argue, and again, we'll get into the details in a little bit, that you should not accept gerim from these places. So Reb Dosef and Hokinas are saying that, no, Chagai said you're allowed to. That's we're going to get to it. We're going to get into it. Right. Why is he saying these three dinim together, by the way? So a couple of interesting things. The Aruch HaNer says each of them is addressed to one of each of the three chachamim to explain to them a mistake that you're making, basically. To the first one about Tzara Sabbat, he's addressing to Rabbi Yeshua. You were afraid to pass an halacha like this because people are going to break in your head. You should know no less than Chagai HaNavi said the halacha is like that. So don't be afraid. Second thing about Amon and Moav, he said to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, you and Masechta Yadayim hold they give Maisa Sheni in those years. No, you should know Chagai said Maisa Oni. And the third one about
Eivar
Yarden. Yeah. And the third one about the Kaudurim and the Talmudim, he's saying to Rabbi Akiva, you hold that anybody who is also by an Isu Lav can cause there can be a that the children are mamzerim, which therefore you hold that if a Jew marries a goy in either direction, that the children are mamzerim. No, we see that you're allowed to accept gerim from them because they're full-fledged goyim. You don't have to worry about it. Yeah. That's one way of looking at it. The Iyun Yaakov has an interesting explanation where he explains basically that Chaga didn't want to be matir three things together, so therefore he first says Sarah Sabah Surah to say according to Basilo to be Machmir. But one interesting thing that Iyun Yaakov points out to Sechad Dvarim is when you get down to it, so how is Beis Shammai disagreeing? Once Reb Dosef and Hokinah says that Chaga said this, how is Beis Shammai ever disagree? How is anybody ever disagreeing again? This Yonason, this Bechor Satan over here, how is he disagreeing with that? If Chagai Anavi said it, who is anybody to disagree with him? Actually, Rav Moshe Feinstein says it's not a problem. Yes, Chagai said it. Big deal. The later Chachamim, if they find a different pasuk or a different drasha or whatever, they're entitled to disagree with it.
When we say that so the later Chachamim disagree with someone of the previous time, you need the whole Beis Din together.
In order to take away takana of this isn't a takana according to this is a halacha that Chagai stated. Now, not as a Navi, because a Navi does not have the right to state halacha. He's saying it as a Tamar Chacham. Well, fine. Chagai, the Tamar Chacham, said it. We Tamar Chachamim learn differently. We're entitled to hold differently. However, the Iyun Yaakov says a very interesting idea. He says, what's the expression? He says, Sora Sabas Asura. Well, what does that mean? It could mean either thing. It could mean like this Hillel, that she's author to do Yibum, and she's therefore Mutter Lashuk. Or it could mean like this Shammai, she's author Lashuk. She's Mutter to do Yibum. So therefore, Beis Shammai could still say, yes, very nice, Chagai said that, but he meant the opposite of what you, Beis Hillel, think he means. Yeah. Anyway, that's what Iyun Yaakov says. That's why he put it together with two other things to make it clear that it's an Isser rather than a Heter, but still, Beis Shammai doesn't necessarily have to dash and smoke him like that, so they could, yeah. Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Kishenichnesu Pesach Echad. When these three Chachamim came to Rav Dosef and Hokinas' house, they all came in through one door. Kishenyotsu, Yotsu with Shlosh of Sachim. When they left through three different doors. No. One possibility, remember, Rav Dosef and Hokinas had warned them, don't tangle with my brother, Yonason, because he's going to bring to you all 300 proofs about Tzara Tabas. So one way of looking at it is, Marsha says two possibilities. One is they left by three different doors in order that they don't meet up with him so they can evade him. The other possibility is, Fakir, they left by three different doors in order to go and find him because they want to hear what he has to say. So sure enough, Yonason met Rav Akiva. Actually, Leva Okmeid. And he started asking him all his questions, and he taka held him up. Rav Akiva didn't have a way to transfer the points that Yonason is making. After all, fine, Chagai and Navi said this, but if it weren't for the Kabbalah that we have from Chagai, yeah, I would have to agree that your points make a lot of sense. Amalai, so Yonason tells him, after who Akiva Shishim Chaholach Mesayfa Elam Bad Sayfa. So you're the famous Rav Akiva that your name goes from one end of the world to the other. You fortunate are you that you deserve such a good name, but you should know. You haven't even reached the level of cattle herders, of cowboys. And instead of being insulted, Rabbi Akiva answers him. You know what? I'm a Rabbi Akiva. That's the Leroy. It's fine. You're saying I'm not even at the level of a cowboy, of a cowherd. I'm not even at the level of a shepherd. Now, what is he? Right. So that's actually the Aruch HaNer points out. Yeah, he's hinting at the fact that I once was a shepherd for Kalba Zavor. Yeah, the famous story. There's a couple of different explanations about this. One is that he's telling him you're not on the level you think you are, and Rabbi Akiva tells him you're right. I'm not even on the level I think I'm on, basically. Although Marsha, he's not insulted, but I don't know. Marsha though has a very interesting explanation that kind of takes it the other way. Yonason is telling him like this. You're telling me you have this cup. You're telling me that my brother told you that he has a Kabbalah from Chagai HaNavi. Very nice. How do we know that Chagai HaNavi's Kabbalah itself is accurate? Who would he have gotten it from? He would have gotten it from the previous Nevi'im, the Nevi'im from the time of the Bais Rishon. For example, Amos. Now we find about Amos that he was a cattle herder. The pasuk describes him Boker Anochi. He says about himself, I herd cattle. But he also had a speech defect. The Medrash says on him. So how do you know, Yonason is saying to Rav Akiva, how do you know this Kabbalah of Chagai is accurate? Maybe it got scrambled in the transmission. That's what he's saying. You didn't even get to the Roye Bakr. How do you know what you got accurately, what came from him? And Rav Akiva answers him back, Nu, and any other Kabbalah, anything that we learn in Torah, who does it go back to? Moshe Rabbeinu, the original Roye Tzayin, the shepherd, who also had a speech defect. You're going to be you're going to argue against the Kabbalah that we learned from Moshe Rabbeinu? Marshall says, yeah. Yeah.
That's right.
That's that, yeah. That's what he says. I feel the royal throne. On the contrary, not even saying I'm lower than you think I am. On the contrary, he's saying Faket, all Kabbalahs ultimately all go back to that royal throne, and you got to accept those. Next, the second din that Rav Dosa had said, Ben Hokinath had quoted in the name of Chagai, was Amun Umoyev Maitu Maitu Ani Bashvius. Now, why is that? The Amamar, we learned, actually, this was the beginning of Chagiga. We had this. Habe Krakim Kokshu Ola Mitzrayim, like Kokshu Ola Bavel. There's many cities in Eretz Yisrael where the Ola Mitzrayim, the Jews under Yeshua and the Shoftim and whatever, conquered them. V'loi Kokshu Ola Bavel, but the people who came up from Bavel to build the second Mitzvah Mitzvah did not conquer them. Or not conquer, really, but whatever, did not settle them. Now, the original Kedusha of Yeshua's times was only for its time. It went away when Eretz Yisrael was conquered. So why did the Ole Bavel leave these cities and not resettle them? In order that the Aniyim will have what to rely on in Shemitah. Since these places are not going to be Chayev in Shemitah, they'll continue growing crops and taking Truma and Meiser. That way, they'll be taking Maisa Oni in that seventh year, and the Aniyim will have what to eat. Same idea, then. Amun and Moav, who also don't keep Shemitah, by the same token, we're saying that instead of setting up, you should give Maisa Sheni those years, which is what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah holds. No, instead the Chachamim set up that you should give Maisa Oni. That way, the Aniyim have what to eat that year. That's the second din. Now we're going to go into the details of the third din. From a Kabbalah. So Chagai had his Kabbalah again. The Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, either when he said his day, didn't know that Chagai had said this, or even if he did, even after Rabbi Yosef ben Hokinah tells him Chagai said this, very nice, Chagai said this. We have a right, if we analyze the Pesukim differently, to argue. The Rambam writes, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Mamrim that if a based in of one generation darshins a Pesuk with one of the Yud Gimel Middos, Shatur and Adreshus for him, and comes up with a din in a certain way, a later based in, even if they're not greater B'chach Mor B'minyan, is allowed to argue against them and darshin the Pesuk a different way and come up with the halacha differently. And we don't say that Chagai is given greater weight because he's a Navi, because being a Navi has nothing to do with Paskin and Halacha. Adrabah, a Navi is not allowed to Paskin Halacha based on Nevoah. Okay, so Makablan game mina kardurim mina tamudim. The third din was, we said that we're allowed to accept gerim, kardu, and tamud. Kardu, by the way, is an area more or less nowadays Armenia or northern Iraq or something like that. Could be the word kardu is related to the word Kurds. I don't know. And tamud is a city in English. It's called Palmyra. It's in Syria. It's an oasis in the middle of the desert over there between Syria and Iraq. And I say, any? Really? You're telling me you can't? You're allowed to accept gedim from kardu? Valtoni Rami Bar Yecheskel and mekablen gedim in a karduyim. So, and we're not going to assume that Rami Bar Yecheskel is arguing against this thing from Chagai without a good reason. Amar Rav Ashi karduyim itmar. No, Rami Bar Yecheskel's brayse is not saying karduyim. He's saying karduyim. That's a different place. Kedamri inchi karduyim sulam. We see that even people know that as a general thing that karduyim apostle. One of the Rishonim, the Rivon, wants to say that tarturium actually is a kind of vegetable or something that people knew to be no good to eat. So like people use that. Once you remember that tarturium are no good to eat, then automatically it helps you remember tarturium are also no good to accept gerim from.
From Cordova in Spain.
No, I think I've seen referenced at some place in what would be nowadays Iran. The Ikadamri, others say that no, the question and answer went like this. Tony Rami Bar Yecheskel, Ein Mekablen Gerim in a Karturim. So according to the second version, everybody was clear that Rami Bar Yecheskel had said Karturim with a tough. The question was, my lab, Hanet Karturim, Hanet Karturim. Lechoro, they're the same thing. And then we have a contradiction. If Chagai said that you were allowed to get him from them. And on that, Omer Avashi, Loi, on that, Vashi answers, Loi, Karturim, Lechod, Vekarturim, Lechod. No, they're two different places. Kedamri, Inchi, Karturim, Psili. People say the Karturim apostle. Either way, it amounts to the same thing that we're saying there's no contradiction. The people of Kaudu you're allowed to accept gain from, the people of Kaudu you're not. Rabbi Yochanan v'Savya d'Ami Tavayu ain't mekablen gain in a Talmudim. Now, Rabbi Yochanan and Savya, either Savya is the name of a Talmud Chacham or it means the elders, whatever it is, they both say that you're not allowed to accept gain from Talmudim. Now, how are they arguing with what Chagai says? The Tosfos says they may have held that Chagai didn't say this. Maybe the Chagah did say about the Kauturiyim, and we're talking about, or maybe he didn't say Talmudim, maybe he said some other place. The Gemara was going to mention on Yudzayin, on Daf Yudzayin, so two similar sounding places, Talmud and Tamud. Maybe he held that Chagah and talked about Talmud. Whatever it is, anyway, he didn't have the Kabbalah. He can't say that he's allowed to argue anymore because Rabbi Yochanan is an Amora and he can't argue on Tanoim. But so we have to say that's what Tosfos is forced to say that he held that Chagah hadn't said this. The question is, Miyam Rabbi Yochanan Hachi? Did Rabbi Yochanan really say that the people of Talmud are potential mamzerim, and therefore they have a problem accepting gerim from them? But we learn in a Mishnah in Nida, Kolak Samim Aboyim Min Arekem Tahorim. Any stains on cloth that come from Rekem are Tahor. Now, in order to understand this, we know. When we learn Paras HaMishpacha, most of us having gone to Chatan classes, we learn that Midrabanan, a kesem, a stain of blood that's found on a woman's clothing is tame. It makes her tame. It makes her nida misafik because it may have actually been dam nida. Even midaraisa it wouldn't because you need hagosha anyway, whatever. But Midrabanan, it makes her nida. The stain itself is also tame for the same reason. It might be dam nida. What we're saying is that any stain, any clothes with blood stains on them that come from Rechem, which is a place in the south of Eretz Yisrael, is tar. It's tar because the people of Rechem are goyim. Goyim, midrabanan, we consider the goyim like nidus or zavus or whatever, but we don't go so far as to say that there's some are also tar. That would be a gzera on top of a gzera, and we don't do that. Rabbi Yehuda Matame, now, but Rabbi Yehuda says that the ksamim that come from this place are tome, mipnei shem gerim v'toyim. Because actually, the people of Rechem, he says, it's not that they're goyim. They're really gerim over there in Rechem, but they're toyim. They've assimilated. They're acting more like the goyim. One other detail we need to understand is that Jews usually are tzniyistic about these things. If a woman has a piece of clothing that has a blood stain on it, she's going to hide it away. She'll put it away in a drawer or in a hamper or whatever until she can wash it. Mashenkin the goyim in those days, anyway, we're not that careful about that kind of thing. So they might have that their dirty clothes are wandering around in the streets over there, or lying around in the streets over there. So the Chachamim are saying any Ksamim that come from there are Tahor because the only ones who would allow their clothes to go around like that with blood stains are Goyim. So there are Jews living in Rechem, but they would be careful about that kind of thing. Rabbi Yehuda says no. Among the people who act like Goyim, who seem to be Goyim in Rechem, some of them are really Jews, but they assimilate like Goyim, and therefore they act like Goyim in that they're not careful about their Ksamim. But if the stains come from among the goyim, then they're definitely tahor. Now, the Gemara says, when we learned this Mishnah in Nida, we discussed it. Kaposik v'tani, the Mishnah is saying a blanket statement. Midaraisa, goyim are not tahor. And even midrabanan, we consider the goyim to be nida, the goyish women to be nida, and the men to be zavim. We don't extend that as far as saying that their kesem is going to be tahor as well.
That's the question. Those going to Tumah
Bayis,
we cannot go there because it's in
the Tumah, right?
Right.
They Tumah by there? Of course, well, Midrabanan, they're Tumah. They're not allowed to be there anyway because Goyim are not supposed to go past the Chel.
Right.
But we don't really have the power to stop them, unfortunately. Everybody says that, you know, after the Six-Day War, Israel should have gone and leveled the place, but, you know, it didn't happen, and by now it's, you know. Yeah.
They decided to come back.
Yeah, that's also true, right. So by now, you know, at this point, it's only Mashiach is going to be able to take care of that. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So, Kaposik v'toni, the Mishnah just says a blanket statement, Mibena Obi Kachavim, that any Ksamim that come from Goyish places are Tahor, which implies Vafilum in Talmud, even if they come from Talmud. V'amr Rabbi Yochanan, Zoyse Meres Mekablim Gerim in Talmud. And Rabbi Yochanan said, that means you are allowed to accept Gerim from Talmud. They are full-fledged Goyim. We're not concerned about that they might be Jews who are Mamzerim. From this that we're saying, that all Ksamim presumably are Tahor, no matter where they come from. The Chitema, now you might say, okay, what? So that contradicts. First, Rabbi Yochanan is saying you can't accept Gerim from Talmud because they might be Jews who are Mamzerim. Now you're saying that the blood stains from there are Tahor because they're all Goyim over there. V'chitema, okay, you might answer, Zois v'lois svirle. Maybe Rabbi Yochanan means Mishnah implies that you're allowed to accept gerim from Talmud. I myself don't hold that way. You can't say that. V'amar Rabbi Yochanan halacha k'stam Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan said as a general rule, the halacha is like a stam Mishnah. That Mishnah in Nidah is a stam Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda argues about it as far as I reckon, but the Mishnah that says v'beina obdi k'chavim, everybody agrees with. And Rabbi Yochanan says the halacha is always like that. But what is it? Is the halacha like the stam Mishnah? It means that every place other than Rechem, any place other than places that we know Jews live in, is considered to be goyim, and we don't have to worry about mamzerus. Or are we saying that ein mekabim gerim mitamud, which is what Rabbi Yochanan is saying? But the answer is amiroyim v'alibid Rabbi Yochanan. There's a machlokas amiroyim in what Rabbi Yochanan said. One way of looking at it is, for example, that he doesn't hold that Rabbi Yochanan holds that the halacha is always like a stam Mishnah. There can be exceptions. Or another possibility is he could say that yes, in general, psalmim that come from in general mekablim gerim from most places except for Talmud. And the same thing with the Ksamim. The Ksamim are Tahor from every place except for Talmud. We have sometimes, you know, Ein Lemaidim in our Klolos. Even if the Mishnah gives a general rule that any place else, we can say, you know, there are exceptions to it. Now, the question is, me Talmud, my time alive. What's the problem with Goyim from Talmud to us accepting them as Gerim? Pligi bar Rabbi Yochanan v'Savia. So Rabbi Yochanan and Savia, again, with Savia as the name of an Amora, or it means the elders, argued about it. One says it's because of the servants of Shlomo. Now, what happened? This city of Talmud, it's also called Tadmor in the Pasuk, was built or rebuilt by Shlomo HaMelech. Who did he have build it? His servants, his slaves, which the Pasuk described there in Malachim and in Divrei Hayamim. He had a force of hundreds of over 100,000 servants who helped build the Mikdash and whatnot, who were avadim. They're avodim knanim. What happened? These people are rich and powerful, so they forced Jewish women to marry them. Now we were
avodim knanim.
Avodim knanim, yeah.
They're rich.
Because they still managed to amass in the course of working for Shlomo HaMelech, you get your hands on quite a bit of money. No, so actually, according to this way of looking at it, this would be even during the time of the first Beis Mikdash already, you would have a problem with Tadmor.
Actually, the reason why they may not be able to become Jews is like what we're going to see in a little bit, that in time of Shlomo HaMelech, there was no conversion.
We're not going to see that soon. The Gemara doesn't mention that over here, but that's a good point. In the time of Shlomo HaMelech, they didn't really accept converts. But besides that, actually, Tosfos points out the problem is not so much that they're avodim. Because once the owner there's a daya, and I believe it's the halacha that once a person gives up hope of ever getting his Eved Kanani back, then the Eved Kanani is automatically free. That's not the issue. The issue is, though, they are still avodim at that point, and we're going according. Now again, we're going to have later on in the Masechta, about a month or so, we're going to have a whole machloikas about what makes a mamzer or not. There is a daya that if an Eved or a goy has relations with a Bat Yisrael, the child is a mamzer. Now, that's not the halacha. The halacha, as we all know, unfortunately, ma'isim b'chol yoyim, is the child is considered kosher. But there is a day that's considered mamzerim. We're going according to that. If these avdei shloime went and forced these Jewish women to marry them, the children then are mamzerim. Now you have, though, the whole city is assimilated. The Jews who are there are living like semi-goyim, or maybe even completely like goyim. You have a person from Talmud comes to become a ger. We can't be certain that he's one of the goyim over there. He may be one of these Jews who's a mamzerim. Or there's even another way of looking at it, which we'll get to soon. There is even a possible way of looking at it. The child is considered a goy and a mamzer. The child of a goyish father and a Jewish mother might be considered a goy and a mamzer. And then in that case, even if they become a ger, they're still a mamzer. We'll get to that soon. There's also the whole story about him kedushin. Here it's just going to mention it briefly.
So is this also have relevance to those people who there's some strong things that point that they may have a Jew, but they were married to non-Jews?
If it goes back several generations, then there's a bit more of an issue with it. You know what, we'll get to it. We may get to it today. More likely we'll get to it tomorrow, but we'll have a little bit of discussion about that, about how the post can look at this whole thing. Anyway, so that's one possibility. The other possibility is that when the Goyim conquered Yerushalayim and destroyed the Beis Mikdash, that they captured Bnois Yerushalayim and raped them and forced them to marry them. So you have a similar kind of problem, Goyim, Goyish men and Jewish women. They helped build.
Iron sent thousands and thousands of people.
Yeah, that's the positive mention. That Shlomo had porters, and he had people cutting trees, and then chopping and cutting stones and whatever. Yeah.
They didn't have to go to the mikveh to do the work.
They had to go to the mikveh, but okay.
They did before they did the work.
The truth is actually okay. You're right. The ones who the pasuk says the 150,000 who it says were porters and whatever. Actually, the pasuk says about them that they were gerim. Actually, these are we'll have later on in the Masechta when we get to the story of the Givonim, that there were many Jews who were impressed by the way the Jews treated the Givonim, how careful the Eved is for the covenant of the Givonim, and so tens of thousands of Goyim became gerim. But the Avdei Shlomo are something other than that. The Avdei Shlomo are b'chlal avodim knanim who Shlomo sent to do his various building project. One of them being building Tadmor, or Talmud rather. Incidentally, by the way, you know, one very common place where we come across the name Talmud is Talmudoy, right? When you talk about Hanukkah, Ad Dekal Yerigel the Talmudoy, when the feet of the Talmudim are out of the marketplace already, that's the latest time to light the menorah. The Rebbe used to always comment on it in Sichus and Maimorim that Talmud is Oisius Meredes, rebelling. So therefore, it represents the idea that the Neiris Chanukah get rid of the Meredes, they get rid of the rebelliousness among that's out there. And he also was seeing that Talmud is like the lowest of the low, so low that according to one Mandarma, we can't even accept Gaiden from them. So Bishleim the Mandarma Mishum Abdi Shlomo. Okay, we understand what the problem would be with the Abdi Shlomo. Kasava Oibit Kachavim Ebed Abbas Yisrael Abad Mamzer. This mandama holds that if a goy or an eved has relations with the Bas Yisrael, the child is a mamzer. So fine, we understand then. There are mamzer mixed in the population of Talmud over there, therefore we can't accept gerim from them just in case. It would be chayv lavin. The halacha is not like that. The halacha is a vlad kosher. But the Rambam points out, in a way, it's worse because in a way, this kind of thing of having intermarrying with the goyim is worse because you know that's what it is. It's intermarrying or having relations, whatever, with goyim, and it breaks down the barriers between Ben Yisrael and Amin. Anyway. El Lamanda Omer Mishum Benos Yerushalayim Mighty. But if you're saying because of Benos Yerushalayim, what does that mean? The answer is like this. Psigibur Rab Yosef Rabbanan, Rab Yosef and the other Rabbanan argued on exactly what happened. Tabayu Mishmei de Rabba Babachana. Both of them are speaking in the name of Rabba Babachana. They tell the story like this. Chad Omer Treser Alpha Gavi Beshitra Alpha Kashtuye. One says that there were 12,000 regular foot soldiers along with 6,000 archers who invaded Yerushalayim. 12,000 regular foot soldiers and 6,000 archers. V'chadom, and the other one says Treisa Alpha Gavir Uminayu Shita Alpha Kashtui. The other says the total size of the army was 12,000, of which people who do a bow and who shoot with a bow and arrow, of which 6,000 were archers. Either way, could be the first space mythos actually. Anyway, B'shosh and Nichnas, it has to be the first space mythos because if we're saying that Chagai had to deal with the matter, he's the beginning of the second space mythos. When the Goyim entered the Heichel and destroyed it, Hakol Nifnu Al Kesef Azav, all the other Goyim who invaded were going after the gold and silver, all the treasures in the Beis Mikdash. The Heim Nifnu Al Bnei Yerushalayim, and these Goyim, these 12 or 18,000 Goyim, went looking for Bnei Yerushalayim to rape them. Shenema, the pasuk says, Noshim B'tzian Inu B'sulas Ba'ara Yehuda. Before the point is, therefore, we have the same kind of problem. It's not the Benoit Yerushalayim themselves, but it's the Goyim who violated them, who therefore, these women had children from them, and again, we have the same problem according to this day of the kids I'm saying.
Even
the it is by of necessity, but yeah, it's still. So, and the point is, these Goyim came from Talmud, or many of them afterwards settled in Talmud, or maybe the descendants of these people, whatever, settled in Talmud, whatever it is, and again, therefore, you have the same problem of Amzeus mixed in there. Before we get back to this point, the Gemara brings in another thing. Rashi says that since we just mentioned one thing of him, then we're mentioning another thing of him. But or actually the other way around, really, that we're going to mention in a minute, another meaning, another thing that happened at the time of the Churban, another thing that these goyim were looking after besides Jewish women. So first we bring in another drasha, which actually relates to Amud Aleph, because we have this pasuk on Amud Aleph. My pasuk zeh sarah olam omrei. The following pasuk in Tilim was said by the sarah olam. Who is the sarah olam? It means that Rashi just says malach. A malach. Tosfos goes into some detail about it, but actually this malach might be none other than Matat, who we learned about in Chagiga, the malach over there who's like, a, so to speak, a reflection of the Eibishter, and Acher made the mistake of thinking he is a second Eibishter, etc. He's called Sara Olam, like he's the one who the Eibishter delegate to for the hashpah for the world goes through him. Yeah. So he says, the pasuk goes, Nara Yisi Gam Zakanti, I was young, then I became old. The question, we have to think, Man Amrei, who could possibly have said this pasuk? Yilem Kutcha Brichu, the Eibishter said it. What do you mean, Nika Zikna Kameh? The Eibishter doesn't grow old, what do you mean, Gam Zakanti? Vel David Amrei, you're going to say that David HaMelech himself said it? Can't be, Mikoshish Kolai. David wasn't that old, he only lived to be 70. What do you mean, Gam Zakanti V'loy Re'isi Tzadik Nezav? Big deal, in 70 years, you've never seen a Tzadik Nezav as Arav HaKashlach in the world, is thousands of years old. So you have to say the Sara Olam, who's existed from the beginning of the world, or almost from the beginning of the world, until now, throughout all that time, he's never seen Tzadik Nezav as Aaron Vakash Lachim. So what do we mean, Nara Yisi Gam Zakanti? Tosfos explains, this Malach is also called Nar. This Malach, Matas, is also called Nar. So actually, there's an interesting thing about it that says in Chassidus about it, that every week he's recreated. Every week, every week after Shabbos, he's recreated. So therefore, he's always eternal now, or he's never more than 6 days old. On the other hand, he's a Kanti, because he's been around in one form or another since my generation.
Who says that?
In Chassidus, it brings it someplace in a mimer. There's also an interesting thing that it says in a mimer also. There's two psukim in Kehelas. Ashvayich eretz shema, what does it say? Iloch eretz shemalkech nar, woe to you, a land where your king is a young boy. And then the next pasuk, Ashvayich eretz shemalkech ben chern, happy are you, a land whose king acts like a free person. So in Chassidus it explains, what is it talking about? Sometimes the Eibishter sends down the Hashpah to the world through Matat, this nar over here. Then it's Iloch, then Ochen vei to us, that we don't get it directly from the Eibishter, we have to get it through a malach. Sometimes there's a time when there's more of a gilui alakus, when we get it directly without having to go through an intermediary. Then ashray echeret. Then we have a good time. Anyway, that's the Tosfos brings that actually that's the question is chanoich matat. So he discusses over here on the it sounds like this malach is around since Shesh's Mebereshis, but chanoich lived a couple hundred years later. So Tosfos says, okay, you know, it could be different medrashim. Could be different madrashim, whether Chanoch became Matat or whether Matat was created along with all the other malachim at the beginning. Anyway, the Amar of Shmuel Nachmeni Amar of Yonis. And my dichtiv, what does it mean? The pasuk says in Eicha, Yodei Paras Tzar Al Kol Machmadeha. The enemy stretched out his hand against all her treasures. Zeh Amun and Moav. This refers to the nations of Amun and Moav. B'shar shenichnesu obikchav lahechol. Again, going back to the Churban, when the goyim entered the hechol. Hakol nifnu akasev azav. Everybody's going for the gold and silver. And okay, yeah, the goyim over there we mentioned before went for the women. The heim nifnu al sefer Torah. The Amunim and Moavim went for the sefer Torah, the famous sefer Azara, the sefer that was kept in the Beis Mikdash. That's the copy from which all the other copies are supposed to be written. They went to go find it and burned it. And burn it. Amru, because that Zesh Akasa by this Torah that it says in it, Lo Yovi Amonu Me'ovi B'Kal Hashem, and they're insulted by that. You saw the fish, they said it deserves to be burnt in fire. So the original Sefer Torah that Moshe went down with the Aron B'Pashtos. There was another Sefer Torah that they kept there. The Kohen Gadol would read from it on Yom Kippur, the king would read from it by Hakel. This is the Pashtos, the one we're talking about, yeah. And Marsha points out, Poras is the same letter as Soras. So Yodai Poras Tsar can mean not only they stretched out their hands against it, but they burnt it. Sin versus Shin. Okay, fine, but it's in the Torah. It's written without Nakodis, right? Yeah. While we're at it, the Gemara Darshan's another pasuk in Eicha over there. Sivo Hashem LeYakov, which also refers to Amon and Moav. The pasuk says that Sivo Hashem LeYakov Sviv Tsarav. Eibishter commanded that Yaakov's enemies are always going to be around him. Amarav, Kagon Humanya Lapumnara. For example, we see this even in Golos. Humanya is a city, the Gemara explains in Kedushin, that's full of Ammonim. The Gemara explains actually that's why it's called Humanya, Meloshin Ammonim. Rashi over here says Yevonim, Orchoner says maybe it's a mistake. Anyway, whatever it is, there's Goyim over there. Pumnara is a city of Jews, as we're going to have more on Yud Zayin. So the Goyim of Humanya would always be harassing the Jews of Pumnara. Very little has changed, basically. I guess we'll stop over here because the next thing is going to take us a little bit far afield.